Welcome to Voice of Albion with Paul Hickman on the White Network.
Welcome to Voice of Albion on the White Network. Today is the 4th of December 2013, and tonight I have a guest from England called Sven Longshanks. He has an interesting blog called Fashgving Weltanschauung. He can correct me if I pronounce that wrong, but I'll put a link up. He also contributes to the popular white nationalist site Daily Stormer. So welcome, Sven. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
No problem. Tonight we have a different subject regarding ancient religions, and we'll also cover the Bible some. I must point out these are not subjects I am very well informed on, so we'll be relying on Sven for many facts and opinions. Of course, we are looking at this from a white perspective, and although it may seem unimportant to our struggle right now, I feel it is good to understand at least a degree about religion, especially Aryan religions. I got interested in Aryan religions, especially in India, when I brought a copy of the Upanishads some years ago. I'll just read a quick extract from the introduction. The Upanishads. At about the time when the Indus Valley civilization became extinct, according to the commonly accepted theory, there took place a relatively large migration of people from the west into the upper Indus Valley. They were a pastoral but militarily powerful people who called themselves Arya, literally noble or honourable, hence the word Aryan. Modern linguistic studies have demonstrated that the language of these people, the language in which the ancient Vedic literature, including the Upanishads, was written, and which later came to be known as Sanskrit, belongs to a family of languages, generally referred to as Indo-European. That includes Greek, Latin, and most of the modern European and northern Indian languages, as well as the ancient and modern languages of Iran. This distribution of languages suggests that a related group of nomadic pastoral people migrated across Europe and towards the east, settling first in Iran and finally in northern India. So, I don't know if you have any comments about that, first of all, Sven.
Yeah, I think it was that movement that carried these... They carried their religions with them, but the one bit that all the academics leave out is they leave out Hebrew from that, because Hebrew comes from this root language that all these other languages came from as well. I mean, academics don't accept it because they think Hebrew is Semitic, because they think the Jews are the Hebrews. So they just sort of discount it without looking into it. But the first chapter actually translates the Bible, was struck by how easy it was for him to translate from Hebrew into English. And the idioms were exactly the same. And I've got some words here that I'll read them out in English first and then Hebrew second.
Okay.
We've got cipher, suffer, sake, saken, saw, sir, sorrow, sarah, puke, pook, chill, chill, aha, aha, mellow, mellow, direct, direct, call, call, room, room, suck, suck, some, in, nod, nud, harass, harass, no, no, nag, nagger, yes, yesh, push, push, oath, oath, bad, bad, pass, passer, shut, shut, mirror, mirror, hug, hug, bore, bar, broth, broth, bath, bath, and crash, rash. So these words are all very similar, and there's hundreds of them that are that similar. I mean, they're really, really close, and a lot of the words in Welsh similar as well. They've got lots of words in Welsh that mean exactly the same thing in Hebrew. So I think that what they're missing out in this when they're talking about the Aryan languages is that Hebrew is one of them, and that the people that are calling themselves Hebrews today cannot possibly be related to the original Hebrews.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have realised words like puke would be sort of ancient words. I thought that was more of a modern word.
Yeah, well, I would have thought that, but that's what's there.
Yeah.
It's in a book by E. Raymond Capps, who's written about 20 different books looking into the Bible from the Aryan Hebrew perspective. I'm convinced by the investigations he's done that the Hebrews were Aryan and that the tribes of Israel ended up being the European peoples today. We'll probably get into that a little bit later. But, I mean, puke, it does sound like a sort of fairly old word, doesn't it? I mean, I'm sure I've seen it in Old English.
Yeah, it may have had a completely different meaning, I suppose. Would you class yourself as Christian identity? Because from what I know about it, what you've just said about the Israelites being European kind of thing, white people, that's very much a tenet of their beliefs, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There's various Christian groups that subscribe to that. There's British Israel and there's Christian identity. And it looked to me like the European people were the tribes of Israel. Just from reading the Bible myself, I came across Christian identity after I had already realised that the Bible was actually talking about the European peoples. But the Christian identity movement, I can't fault it, and I get a lot of my information from there. I regularly listen to Bill Fink. I think he's probably one of the best people in the movement. He's done a lot of very scholarly research.
He's very passionate about Christian identity, isn't he?
Yeah, very, very passionate about it. And I mean, I check what he says. I go through the Bible. I've read the Bible myself a few times. I've got various different versions of it. I've even got the first Catholic one that was brought out that they banned and they burned, and then they brought out another Catholic one and called it by the same name.
What do the Jews call the Old Testament?
They called that the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
But today they call it the Torah. I think it's the Torah Shebuel Pa. And they say to Christians, we believe in the Torah. But what they don't tell the Christians is there's another Torah as well, which is the Torah Shevet Tov. I think the wording is. And that's the Talmud, and the Torah, which is the Old Testament, is basically for women and children.
Uh-huh.
And look at it as like fairy stories and not be paid attention to. And the Talmud is the Torah that they pay attention to.
Is the Talmud where they talk about it's okay to steal from a Gentile, and you can kill a Gentile and you won't be prosecuted and stuff like that?
Yeah, that all comes from the Talmud, and it's a gross distortion of what's actually in the Old Testament.
So just to be clear, and excuse my ignorance, but I'm sure a lot of other people get confused too. The Old Testament hasn't got those things in what I've just said.
No. Not stealing from Gentiles. I mean, the word Gentile comes from Gentilis. It means of the same gens. It means of the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other word that gets translated as Gentiles is ethnos, which means the various ethnicities of the same race.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So when it's talking about Gentiles in the Bible, I mean, the Judahites and the Israelites were the same race as the Greeks and the Romans and the Persians originally. So they were all part of the same race. They were all Gentiles of the same race, part of different ethnicities of the same race. So another word that gets translated for Gentiles is nations.
Mm-hmm.
So, when it says nations in the Bible, people don't realise that what the word that was there was Gentiles. But they've changed it around, and the Jews have said, Gentiles just need somebody who's not a Jew. It's all the people that aren't Jews. So that's one distortion. And the bits in the Old Testament that are talking about wiping out and exterminating entirely the Canaanites. Well, Canaanites were mixed race. That's why they needed to be exterminated, so that they didn't pollute the bloodlines of the other Aryan races, which they did end up doing. They did end up polluting the bloodlines. That's what happened to the Egyptians.
Yeah, okay. Just to break it down a bit, I've got some questions, so let me fire a question at you, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Many ancient religions come from the same source, you contend. Also, Christianity comes from this source. Explain, please.
Okay, well, if we look at major religions, you've got Christianity, Hinduism, you've got Buddhism. Well, all of those have an Aryan source. And if you look at the earlier religions from that, you've got the Egyptian beliefs, the Assyrian beliefs, you've got Zoroastrianism, you've got Babylonian beliefs, and they're all very similar. They all have similar myths, similar sounding names, and it's not that any of them were plagiarising the others. It was that originally they started off from the same source, they started off from the same group of white people that then spread out and colonised the world. So they took their beliefs with them as the languages changed and as religion kept evolving. It slightly changed. But one of the ways that you can see that they started off the same is with the Elohim, which is from the first book of the Bible. And Elohim is translated as God, but it's actually a plural word, and the Strong's Concordance says that it's plural in form and it's single of nature, a single of substance. So it's basically saying that there's a plurality of different forms, mm-hmm. but single of substance. Now, that is a perfect description of the Hindu gods, because there's only one God, but he has many different forms, and they honour him in his different forms. Their different aspects or attributes of God get personalised into these different characters. And you know that the Hindu gods came from the Norse gods.
I wasn't sure of that. I know there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah, that seems to be the accepted academic view.
Well, it would make sense with the migrations already from the Upanishads, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's well, I think the Aryans went over there. I think there were already an Aryan race over there, but they were decaying. I think they started breeding with the dark races.
Yeah.
And the Western Aryans went in there and reinvigorated their civilization and re-inspired them and brought back the laws of caste, where there was no interbreeding between the races. And you had the god Indra, who was the destroyer of the dark races, and he was the one that brought in the caste system. But the symbols, Indra had a blonde beard or a golden beard and golden hair. He rode a white horse, just like Odin, just like Christ at the end of days. And his symbols were a thunderbolt, a rainbow, clouds, rain. Obviously, he was a god of war. Mm-hmm. And the god of the Old Testament, in the Bible, of the Adamites, his symbol was a thunderbolt. They would put their sacrifices out on the altar, and the thunderbolt would come down and light the sacrifice. Obviously, after the flood, the rainbow appeared. That was the first time the rainbow appeared. And that was his symbol. He led Moses through the desert with a pillar of cloud. And he brought down floods of rain on the prophets of Baal. So big similarities between Indra, as in king of the gods, mm-hmm. and Yahweh, as in god of gods. So it seems to me that it's the same character that's been talked about. There's other similarities of the names, like you've got Brahma, who's the creator god, or the creator aspect of God in the Hindu beliefs, and Abraham is the father of all the nations in the Bible. And Abraham's wife has the same, very similar name to Brahma's wife, and they have similar sounding names for their children as well. So you've got these links that you would never have thought that there'd be links between the Bible and Hinduism, and the establishment tells you that the Bible was the establishment of monotheism, and it was different to all the other religions. Well, I don't think it was that different to the other religions.
Yeah.
It's the other religions that have become changed now, and they've become distorted and corrupted by the mixed-race people that have inherited those religions. Whereas originally, it was always seen as one God of all that had various different forms. I mean, why should God be limited to one form? You know, I mean, we all have different forms. He created all of us. Why should he be limited to one particular form? So you would have these different forms, like the war god Indra, the god of love, and god of peace. You've got Mitra, who's the god of contracts. And you've got the various king gods, like Osiris. And I think, Osiris, Odin, Ymir, and Purusha, aspect of the Hindu god Purusha that sacrificed himself. All of them were sacrificed or chopped up into pieces and then resurrected again. And then you've got, it's like a sort of prefigure for that actually happening with Christ, which is, I see the Christian religion as the later evolution of these other religions. And the difference with the Christian religion is that it stayed within the white people's hands.
Mm.
These other religions, as I say, they fell to the mixed race descendants of the people who brought the religions there and built the place. It's like the ancient civilization of Egypt has now fallen to people we now call Egyptians. But they can't lay any claim to being the people that built that ancient civilization.
If well, that guy on the History Channel, Zari Haras, he tries to, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And come out by accident about the what was it, King Tut's DNA was European, North European.
Yeah, and Ramses as well. You know, a lot of these mummies, they've got blonde hair or ginger hair, and they do the tests on them, and they're white. And the Egyptians, according to the biblical reports, come from Ham. There were three sons, Noah, basically. There was Shem, Shem, Japheth, and Ham.
Mm-hmm.
And the civilization that came from Ham were the Ethiopian, the Egyptian, and the Sheba, which may well have been the original Indian one. But these Hamites, they pretty much fairly soon after the flood, they started breeding with the Nubians and the dark races.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up going brown in colour, and their civilization ended up dying out, basically. And I think part of the symbolism of Osiris dying and then being resurrected is like the Egyptian people, you know, they died out, but civilization was resurrected in another white nation elsewhere. And you had all these different white civilizations popping up, and then as soon as they mixed their blood, the civilization would fall, and you just have people there that were no longer able to maintain that civilization.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that all these major religions were started out by the white people, and there are other aspects of it that point to them being white. And they were a worship of God, not a worship of the goddess. They honoured the goddess. There's nowhere in the Bible that says there isn't a goddess. So the Aryan races would worship God, and they would honour the goddess, and they would be, most of the time, they would be celibate. Unless it was for procreating the continent, and that would give them extra vigour and vitality and spiritual insight. And the other races, the dark races, they would worship the goddess, they would honour the god, but they would worship the goddess, and they would have orgies and licentiousness and corruption. And Alfred Rosenberg did a lot of research into the myths and the Aryan myths, and he figured that it was the darker races' myths who had corrupted the Greek and the Roman myths with their depravity.
Mm.
We talked about the Etruscans. But one bit that I don't quite agree with him on is he said that the Semites had corrupted it as well, but he was under the impression that the Jews were Semites, and that Semites meant mixed race. Mixed race people like the Jews and like the people from the Middle East today. But if Shem is a racial term, it's a genetic term, it's the descendants of the man called Shem, and the man called Shem was white. So Arabs, Jews, and the people in the Middle East today cannot claim to say that they're descended from Shem, and they cannot possibly claim that they're descended from Abraham.
Hmm. Okay. Let me ask you something else.
Yeah.
Why should a Christian become a white nationalist, and why should a white nationalist embrace Christianity, in your opinion? What is the advantage of doing that?
Well, I think a major part of Christianity, let me start with, it's Christian values that I think are important, rather than believing in certain supernatural things. It's the values that are most important, I think. I think all white people, Christ came for white people, he didn't come for anyone else. It's said that he just came for the tribes of Israel, and the tribes of Israel, I think, can be identified as a European people. I can go into that a bit later on. But some of these values, these Christian values, a very important one is honour your father and your mother.
Yeah.
And that's honour your ancestors. That's follow your traditions. Honour your ancestors. Don't let them down. Now, there's also a eugenic aspect to honouring your father and your mother, or there used to be. You had to marry who you were told to marry, and you had to be within the caste.
That does make sense, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were castes in the Bible, just as in the Old Testament, just as there were castes in the Aryan civilization in India. And the love your neighbour bit, it doesn't say love the alien, it says love your neighbour, which means love your racial kinsman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it constantly repeats again and again throughout the Old Testament not to marry strange women. And it's the marriage of strange women that brings all the evil into the world. And the Bhagavad Gita says the same, that it's from the corruption of women, the corruption of castes, that the evil comes into the world. And the Bible is very anti-usury, extremely anti-usury. And Christianity, for the first 1,200 years, usury was outlawed completely. And it was only when the Pope started relaxing his views on usury that changed, and unfortunately the Protestants followed the Pope and relaxed the laws on usury, because up until 1200 AD, I mean, Jews just couldn't exist in Europe, because they would be kicked out. They couldn't exist in England. In fact, they were kicked out of England, I think it was 1275 or 1290 when
1290,
King Edmund, 1290, yeah, when King Edmund kicked them out. And the Bible is very anti-Jewish. Jesus calls them the sons of the devil. He tells them they're nothing to do with his family, nothing to do with his father. He certainly didn't come for them. He didn't even try to convert them. He just constantly tied them in knots, basically, and showed that they were of the wicked one. And then, obviously, the Bible is pro-marriage, and it's pro tradition, and you know, our fathers followed its precepts, and they built Christendom, and they built a just and moral society. And I think these Christian values were sort of reinvigorating the early Aryan values of marriage and continence. and it's written that it was the opposite of those sex orgies and depraved things that what they called pagans at the time were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And Christianity was the opposite of that. So there's a lot that I think Christians can get from white nationalism. I mean, they should be white nationalists anyway. If they want to honour their father and their mother and love their neighbour, then they should be standing up for the nation, and their loyalty should be to flesh and blood, not economic systems or political systems. And the second part of your question, I mean, why should a white nationalist embrace it?
Yep.
Well, it's anti-Jew for a start. So the Bible itself, and if you look back at early Christianity, it's the most anti-Jew thing there is.
That's going to be hard for a lot of people to get their heads around.
They hate it. Jews absolutely hate it. You know, they've spit on the Christians. Their Talmud says that Jesus is burning in hell in hot excrement. They call him an idol worshipper. The way they obviously treat the Christians in Israel is terrible.
Mm.
They desecrate the churches. When they were being evicted from the countries in Europe, they were advised to infiltrate the churches and take them over from within,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty much, you know, sort of what they've done.
Okay, just to be totally clear, but I guess you've answered it already to a degree, but this is what I think stops a lot of sort of white nationalists, you know, even being, how could you say, even having an open mind, Christianity. My question is, the Bible seems to be all about Israel and the end of days being all about Israel. Therefore, why should any white nationalist take any interest in the Bible and Christianity?
Well, Israel is a people descended from Jacob Israel. And Jacob Israel was pure-blooded white Aryan. And his 12 sons were the 12 tribes of Israel. And they were sent to exterminate the mixed-blooded Canaanites and take the land back and prevent these Canaanites from breeding with the other races. We had the flood, Noah's flood. That came about because the sons of God bred with the daughters of man. And the sons of God were the sons of Adam. The sons of the gods were basically the sons of Adam, who was created by the gods. And the children of men were the offspring from Cain and the lower races. And the lower races are described as beasts. And the Negroes are described as beasts in the Bible. And it says, whosoever lieth with a beast shall be put to death.
Are you sure, though, Sven, that they're talking about Negroes? They're not talking about bestiality or something?
Well, I can read you some of the verses.
Go on. Go on.
I've got some of them here. After that, I'll read you some of the ones that say about who Adam was and who the Adamites were. Genesis chapter 9, verses 5. Surely the blood of your lives will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of man. At the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. So the beasts have got hands. Exodus chapter 22, verse 9. Whosoever lieth with a beast shall surely be put to death. So that's not, you know, that's mixing the race. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 23. Neither shalt thou lie with any beast to defile thyself therewith, neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion. It's confusion of the kinds. It's mixing the blood together and confusing the kinds. It's cursing the offspring for all eternity. Jeremiah 21, verse 6. I will smite the inhabitants of this city, both man and beast. They shall die of a great pestilence. Jonah chapter 3, verse 8. But let man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily unto God. Yea, let them turn everyone from his evil way and from the violence that is in their hands. I mean, there's quite a few here. I'll just give you another one. Jeremiah chapter 27, verse 6. And now have I given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and the beasts of the field have I given him also to serve him. So they were servants. They were created separately. They were created separately to Adam. Now Adam was the one who named them. I mean, the word Adam itself, people think it just means mankind, but it doesn't just mean mankind. If you look at Strong's Bible Concordance, which tells you what these Hebrew words mean, Adam means man, human being, mankind, and husbandman, but it also means red earth or ruddy skin colour. Ruddy meaning having a fresh, healthy red colour.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that next. You talk of those that blush and those who have blue eyes in the Bible. Could you elaborate on this, please?
Yeah. I was just saying there with Adam that he has the word means red earth or ruddy skin colour. So it's associated with the ability to blush. There's only one type of man that has ruddy cheeks and is capable of blushing. Darwin described blushing as the most peculiar and most human of all expressions. And we've got an apocryphal text, which is the Testament of Judah, and it associates blushing with the spirit of truth.
Hmm.
says, and the Spirit of Truth testifieth all things and accuseth all, and the sinner is burnt up by his own heart and cannot raise his face to the judge. So that's specifically talking about a Spirit of Truth, which only Adam is the only one that seems to have the Spirit of Truth, because when God created Adam, he breathed the breath of life into his nostrils and he became a living soul. The breath is synonymous with spirit, as life is with truth. So the breath of life that was breathed into it was another way of saying the Spirit of Truth. Now, you may think this is a little bit like the Just So stories, but Adam had God breathed into Adam's nostrils, and the white man has a larger chest cavity than any of the other races, which is why Negroes sink, because they don't have a large chest cavity. That's why when they're invading Italy, when they capsize, they all sink and drown because they can't swim very well.
You think that's why they're such bad swimmers? Somebody says to me it was to do with the pores being bigger, but I don't know about that.
Well, there are different physical.
There's a different difference with the lungs, isn't there? I know that.
Lung
capacity.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and here you go. God breathes into Adam's lungs. And there's another thing that I've noticed with them is they don't appear to be able to douse. Now, something that the white man has always been able to do is to douse.
What, to find water, you mean?
Yeah, to find water and build wells. And I mean, the army used dowsers for all sorts of things, not just for wells. So there's obviously some spiritual aspect to the area that the Negro doesn't have. So, I mean, basically, ascertaining that Adam was white, you know, because he could blush, and his name meant that he was bloody of colour and he could blush. And then if you look through the Old Testament, there are lots of verses describing the people in the Old Testament. I'll just read a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
Lamentations chapter 4, verse 7. The Nazarites were purer than snow. They were whiter than milk. They were more ruddy in body than rubies. And their polishing was of sapphire. And polishing was the eye colour. So he's saying that the Nazarites were white skin and blue eyes.
Because you can get blue sapphires, but today we do think of sapphires being red, right?
Yeah, I'm going to get to see different coloured ones now, but yeah, I'm sure it used to be blue.
Yeah.
But Song of Solomon, chapter 5, verses 10, my beloved is white and ruddy, chiefest among 10,000. Now that's Solomon, and Solomon was the son of David. So they're saying he was white and ruddy.
Mm.
I don't see any white and ruddy and beautiful looking Jews, to be honest. Not unless they mix their blood with someone else. And you've got paleness, it mentions paleness, faces being turned into paleness. Jacob shall not now be ashamed, neither shall his face now wax pale. Ezra chapter 9, verse 6, and said, O my God, I am ashamed and blush to lift up my face to thee, my God, for our iniquities are increased over our head and our trespasses grown up into the heavens. Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 15, were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore they shall fall among them that fall. At the time that I visit them, they shall be cast down, saith the Lord. So because they could no longer blush, you know, he's saying that they're going to fall.
Do you think that means that they'd become mixed race?
Yeah, because they could no longer blush.
Oh.
And I mean, it's telling you, Jacob here, the house of Jacob. Jacob shall not now be ashamed, neither shall his face now wax pale. I mean, only if he was a white man could his face go pale. And that's Jacob Israel, the father of the tribes of Israel. So, you know, it's pretty clear that they're white. I've got one more here. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 12. And he sent and brought him in, and he was ruddy, and with all of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise and anoint him, for this is he. And I think that was David, King David. So, I mean, it's basically saying that these people were white people. They were Aryan.
So, yeah, because that was kind of my next question. You believe that Christianity was intended for white people, not all humanity, as is commonly believed. And that's what you're kind of saying now, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry if I was sort of going forward from one of your questions.
No, it's okay.
It was sort of talking about Israel.
See, I have not heard any of this before. I've got a Bible somewhere, but I mean, I've never read it. But I may sort of, you know, have a look at it. So it doesn't hurt to for people to sort of be aware of these things.
Yeah, but I think a lot of the problem people have is they think it's talking about the Jews. So when it's talking about, exterminating all these people and massacring them and taking back a country, because Canaan was their country. It was given to them by Lot, and Canaan was mixed blood. He was told that he was cursed. He would be a servant for servants. So he's saying, you're going to be a servant of the beasts, basically, because you're of mixed race. And his people took over the land of Canaan, and the pure Israelites were tasked by Yahweh with exterminating them.
So would you say then that over the centuries, as we know that the Jews are very skilled at co-opting things,
yeah.
Would you say they've kind of co-opted Christianity and this stuff about beasts in the field? They thought, oh, right, so it was about, you know, the Europeans, the Aryan having beasts, meaning like slaves and stuff, where they'll turn it around to and invent the word goyim and then say, you know, it's the goyim who are the beasts of the field.
Yeah, I think that's what they've done pretty much. And the irony is, when they say, the Goyim aren't worth anything, it's them that aren't worth anything, because they're mixed race. So they have, they've taken sort of Aryan scriptures and twisted it to try and make it apply to themselves. And in that time, we as Aryan people have forgotten where we came from, basically. We've forgotten our history, and they managed to keep hold of a small part of it and have applied it to themselves. And culturally, they may have parts to do with the tribe of Judah, a very small remnant culturally, the same as the people that live in Egypt now. Culturally, they may have something to do with the people that built the pyramids, but it's not to say that they actually come from Judah. They don't come from Judah. They're mixed race. You know, they try to deny the fact that they've got two fathers in the Bible. So it's obviously been, that allegation has been put to them that they have two fathers.
Yeah, because these modern genetic studies, I've read bits and bobs here and there, say that, you know, 80% of the Jews don't even come from the Middle East whatsoever.
No, well, they're mixed. They've got Turkish, Khazars, a little bit of European in there, Mongol in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a real jumbled up mess, basically. And considering the Old Testament is strictly about keeping the race pure, Abraham went to really great lengths to make sure that his youngest son married within the caste. This is how come you know that they had their caste there, because he went to great lengths to make sure that his son married who he wanted him to marry. And that happens a few times in there. And I think where people get mixed up, they often talk about a geographic location. Like they say that David came from a Moabites, trying to say that the Moabites were one of these Canaanite tribes. But the land of Moab had been inhabited by the tribes of Israel for 200 years at that point. So there were no mixed race Moabites in there. It was just that Ruth was from the tribes of Israel, but she was living in the land of Moab. The same as you get Americans now. You think of America, you think of a white man, really. But you have a Negro says that he's American. He's just saying that he's American because he lives there.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll never explain that too well. But the Israel bit that you were saying about why should people take any interest in the Bible when it's talking about Israel? Israel is the tribes of Israel, and these tribes, they became dispersed in about 700 BC, and they became known as the Cymry and the Scythians, eventually becoming the Canarians and the Celts and the Gauls. Because in 700 BC, according to the official history books, you suddenly get this group called the Cymrians. They're sort of under the Black Sea, sort of just above Persia, sort of area, and they just suddenly appear there. And the Greeks called them the Gomri, and the Assyrians called them the Gomri, and that became Cymru, and then that became Cymru,
which is Wales.
Wales today is called Cymru, and it all came from King Omri, who was called Gomri, because the Israelite king at the time was called Omri. And you can work this out from the tablets that are in Assyria. There's a library full of cuneiform tablets where they were taking records at the time that mentioned this group called the Gomri and exactly where they were. And then you get the Greek historians talking about the Cimmerians in the same place. And then there's books in the Bible which talk about the tribes of Israel being put in exactly the same place at the same time, 700 BC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they sort of went into Europe, but there are already people from the tribes of Israel here in Europe, because there was a large group that left Egypt at the same time that Moses left, or just before Moses left. And then they're recorded again by Greek historians, and they talk about these people leaving Egypt and coming into Europe. And the word Hebrew itself means colonizer. It's Phoenician for colonizer. And what you had Judah, which was the kingly line, and he had two sons, and one was called Pharez, and one was called Zerah. And they were in the womb, they were fighting in the womb, and one of them put his hand out first, and they tied a red ribbon around it, and to say that he was the firstborn son. And that was Zerah. And that's why when you look at the Northern Ireland flag, you've got a red hand there, because it's the red hand of Zerah that had the red cord tied around it. So Zerah's two twins, Zerah and Pharez, and Pharez stayed in the Middle East, and that's the line that David and Solomon came from. And Zerah and his people left Egypt, and he had a son called Kecrops, and he's mentioned in the Bible as Chalcol, and he's mentioned in the Greek historians, and it all gets a little bit mythic here as well, because
yeah.
He's kept to have mythical aspects to them, just like the avatars in the Hindu myths, you know, they have like these godly supernatural aspects to them. This King Kecrops, he founded the line of the Trojan kings and the Frankish kings, the Scandinavian kings, and one of his line was Brutus of Troy, that founded Britain. So this was all going on sort of from 700 BC onwards, and then from 700 BC you had this other group of Israelites.
Hold on a second, Sven. Didn't the Romans call Britannia?
Brutus called it. Brutus is where the name comes from, and he founded London as New Troy.
And really?
I think it was his son that married a king's daughter, Latinus's daughter, or something like that. And that's where you got the start of the Roman Empire from. Because it all gets very, very mythical at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I've written some stuff about that, actually. I'll just try and have a little look for it here. The Roman link. Kecrops. Yeah, King. He founded Athens. He was at the head of all the kingly lines in Europe, owing to him being one of the sons of Zerah, who was the son of Judah.
Yeah, because the name Athens comes from Athena, right? The goddess Athena.
Yeah, yeah. And King Brutus was the grandson of King Aeneas, who was the founder of the Roman Empire. Yeah, I got it wrong. Got it the wrong way around. King Brutus was the grandson of King Aeneas, and he was the founder of the Roman Empire. And then Brutus ended up on Britain with a large group of his fellow Trojans.
But with the Roman thing, Sven, there's kind of like two stories, isn't there? Because you're saying that it's sort of related to this Christian stuff, but isn't it? I've heard the story of two wolves. Was it Romulus and Remus or something?
Well, yeah, they would have been part of it. See, they're all Aryan. They're all descended from these same three people, Shem, Ham, and Japhet. And these Roman tales and myths, that's why they're similar to the stories of these people in the Bible, basically. Like, the, if you look at, there's one of the books that's outside the Bible, actually, the book of Jasher, where all the 12 sons of Jacob, Israel, they all have these supernatural abilities, warlike abilities, and they have these voice weapons that they use, and you know they strike terror at people, and they just have heart attacks on the spot. They could do these, you know, weird supernatural things with their voices. So you've got all these sort of mythic aspects, similar myths to the Roman myths and the Greek myths.
Mm.
I haven't looked too much into the Roman side. This is a bit later, but the Greek side of it, that came from the tribe of Dan, and also from this Cecrops's, one of his brothers was called Darda, also known as Darda or Sindara, and he was part of Troy as well. His descendants were all there until the destruction of it, and the last son of his line was King Aeneas, who married the daughter of Latinus, and they started off the Roman Empire. So it all goes back to these tribes after the flood. Some of them arrived just from Shem, and then later on there were ones that came descended from Abraham.
Okay.
So they're all linked. You see, they're all Aryan. That's the important bit to see, is that they're all Aryan. And the ones that were the kingly line, and the ones that were more adventurous and more blessed by God, were the ones that came through Abraham's blessing. Because Abraham's blessing was that many nations would come out of him. And of course, you've got all the white nations now and all the civilizations. There'd be a great seagoing people. Obviously, we've conquered the world, basically sailed around the world, discovered all these other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And their enemies' gates would be their own. So they would be formidable in war. They'd never lose at war. And we pretty much have. None of these other races could dare to challenge, you know, the white race, basically.
True.
All these, and none of those prophecies and promises have ever come true for the Jews.
Hmm.
Now, there's a lot of them throughout the Bible. This is what first tipped me off to it, was these promises and these prophecies. I'm thinking, well, the only people this applies to is the white race.
Yeah, okay. That's a lot to think about. Could you talk about the word Semites? I understand that the Jews call themselves Semites and make a big deal about so-called anti-Semitism, while in reality they are not Semites at all.
Yeah, I mean, they say that they're Semites and the Arabs are Semites, don't they? That's what they like to say.
Yeah.
They say that they're called Semites because they come from Shem.
Ah. Yeah? Sorry, I missed that. It's only then you've just repeated it and it's kind of clicked here. Semites, Shem.
Yeah.
Shemites.
But they don't actually put the H in the word for some reason. It's very strange. You would think if they were actually Shemites, they'd be quite proud of putting an H in there. Because Abraham, who was the father of Jacob Israel, his name was originally Abram. And God made all these promises to him and put an H in his name, so he became Abraham.
Mm.
So I just find it funny that these people that are now saying they're descended from Shem have actually lost an H.
Yeah, it sort of goes into the kind of Antichrist thing, don't it, I suppose?
Yeah, well, I think the Jews are the Antichrist. Their religion is the complete opposite of Christianity. They mention that it says in the Bible anyone who denies Christ is an Antichrist, and the only one that's denying Christ at the time were the Jews. So, you know, it's quite clear that he's talking about the Jews as the Antichrist.
Mm.
In the Arabs, the word Arab itself means mix, mingled. So the Jews are saying they're Semites and so are the Arabs. I mean, it's an impossibility. Their genes are mixed, so they cannot come from Shem. You know, if, say, the king was to go and get a peasant girl pregnant and she had a kid, that kid couldn't say that he's a king, he's a prince.
Yeah.
And it would have to come from the king in line for him to be able to say that he's a prince. You know, two fathers. So the word bastard, originally, it meant coming from two different races.
Really?
It wasn't people that weren't married. You know, it was that the marriage was unlawful because they were from two different races.
How did you come to that conclusion, Sven?
Well, if you look back at the way that the word, the evolution of the word, it comes from a word called Mamza.
Mamza.
Which is an Old Testament word, and it means from two different races. So it's a bastard. And when you think about it, you think, well, you know, they didn't ever used to hand out a piece of paper saying that people were married.
How does Mamza become bastard though?
Well, Mamza is a Hebrew word, and the translation of it is bastard, is an offspring of an unlawful marriage.
Uh-huh. And
when you look at what an unlawful marriage is, they obviously weren't keeping records and handing out pieces of paper saying, well, you've signed this contract, we're lawfully married. Yeah, lawful marriage had to mean something else. So lawful marriage meant in accordance with natural law, i.e. not mixing the races.
Mm.
It would have been not mixing with the beasts, basically. Very non-politically correct to say, but I think that when it talks about beasts having hands, beasts being able to breed with man, Adamite man, white man, I mean, the beasts can only be the other races.
Yeah. Okay.
And particularly, I think, Negro, because there's a mention of the servants, talking of servants all the time. So I think at that time, you know, they used the beast as a servant. And because there's all this other parts in the Bible saying that you've got to treat the servants well. And obviously the original word was slave. So it's saying you've got to treat slaves well. And slaves look after their masters. There's another bit where it says don't wipe out all the people in this area, because otherwise the beasts will multiply and take over it.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, so they've got this high fertility rate. You know, these offspring of these mixed races is the source of all the problem. You've got, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says the source of all the evil in the world is the mingling of the castes. It's the corruption of the women and then mingling of the castes. And right at the beginning of the Bible, you've got Cain, whether he's the son of Adam or whether he's the son of the serpent. That's, you know, another issue. But straight away, Cain leaves and he's got a wife with him and he builds a city. So there are obviously people there already that he was able to marry and that were able to build this city, and yet the only people that were there at the start was Adam and Eve, and then there was Cain and Abel. They were the only Adamites there. It tells you they were the only Adamites there. So Cain can only have married one of these beasts, because that's the only other things that are created are the beasts.
One of the brothers killed the other brother, right?
Yeah, Cain killed Abel, and then he goes off with a wife that she's suddenly acquired from somewhere, and builds a city. And there's a verse which where God is talking to Cain, and he says, "Sin is crouching at your door, and its desire is for you to rule over him." And it says him, but it might as well be it. It says, if it was to say, "And its desire is for you to rule over her," then that mirrors the exact same verse in chapter 4 when it's talking to Eve and it says your desire will be for your husband, for him to rule over you. So it's sort of using the same language and saying to Cain, sin is lying at your door and its desire is for you to rule over. So, you know, it seems to me to be saying that there's a beast there that he's found particularly attractive and he ends up mating with her. And that explains why the sons of the gods weren't supposed to mix with the children of men, and when they mate with the children of men, there lots of evil comes about, and you have to have the flood. And in the Apocrypha, in the book of Adam and Eve, which is an apocryphal book, it's not part of the Apocrypha.
What does that mean? Sorry, Apocrypha.
Well, the Apocrypha are extra books to the Bible. There's the Apocrypha that was added to the older Bibles, which are various books that were written at different times, maybe not by the authors that they say, but they're used as references for other books in the Bible. They're basically other reference books from the time. And there are other books which are called apocryphal books, which are extra books to the Bible from the time that weren't included in the original versions of the Bible.
Okay.
So it's a bit complicated, but there's one of them which is called the Books of Adam and Eve. It's four books, and the whole overriding thing throughout it is that the children of Adam must never hold intercourse with the children of Cain. And the children of Cain, they seduce the children of Adam, and that's the end of everything, basically, and they have to have this blood. And these children of Cain seduce the children of Adam with music and dancing and makeup, because obviously they've learned how to metalwork and make musical instruments, and that's referenced in Genesis, and it's also referenced in the Book of Enoch. It goes into sort of more detail there. Some people will say that the sons of God were the angels, but the earliest church fathers said that the sons of God, children of Seth, Shet, were the children of Adam, and the daughters of men were the daughters of Cain. So the daughters of Cain were race mixed, and the sons of Adam were pure. For some reason, they must have found these half-caste women attractive, and they bred with them. So all those hybrids were then wiped out in the flood. Whether that was a local flood or a larger flood, it's not so important. You can just look at it as a mythic sort of tale telling you that it was so bad, race mixing, that all of creation had to be wiped out.
Yeah.
Whether it was just in one area. And then after that, after the flood, it starts again with Ham's line, and Ham's son, who was called Canaan, is told he's cursed, and he's told that a servant of servants will he be. So he's sort of saying a servant of beasts will he be. So he's saying he's lower than the beasts. Because he's a half-caste. And then later on, his descendants, there's a commandment to exterminate all of them.
Do you think Hitler was a Christian, or do you think he liked bits of different religions? Because it's kind of a bit of Hinduism he sort of seems to be interested in, and Christianity. What do you think?
Well, I mean, he was an Aryan Christian. He knew Jesus was not a Jew. He knew that. You should read Mein Kampf. He talks, mentions God quite a fair few times, and talks about Christian view of things. And from what I read of him, he was the epitome of Christian values, I would say. He loved his neighbour as himself. He honoured his nation. He was prepared to die for his nation, to do whatever for him. It seemed to me he was putting into practice what Christianity should be about.
Well, if you are right, and the Bible and Christianity is kind of racial and dead against race mixing and was written for the Aryans and stuff, then that would sort of more point to it for me.
If they had known about this, I'm amazed that they didn't come across it, because this sort of research was, it was about then, it wasn't that popular, but there was, research into this back then. It started about 150 years ago. So I'm surprised that they didn't come across it. I think they got caught up on the idea that the Jews were somehow the sons of Shem. They got caught up on this vengeful Old Testament God, not realising that the Old Testament God was actually fighting against the same people that National Socialist Germany was fighting against. The Jews, what we call the Jews today, are the same as the Canaanites from the Old Testament.
Well, I mean, the Iron Cross is still a cross, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah. The cross is an ancient Aryan symbol, along with the swastika. And I think the first time I saw a swastika was in a church, wasn't it?
I don't know.
I think that was where, that's what they say he was inspired by. It was there's a church, I think, in the village where he was brought up, and there's a swastika on the lintel.
You know the Star of David?
Yeah.
It looks like two pyramids. What's the story with that?
I haven't looked into it that much. I know that it's used by some of the Hindu gods. So again, that was probably stolen by the Jews. They seem to have stolen. Everything they have would be stolen because they're mixed race. They weren't created and given anything. God created all these separate kinds, and each one was given a particular realm, as it were. And then if they then start mingling together and producing something different, they've got that. You know, they've got nothing. They've got nothing that actually comes naturally to them because they weren't created. They were created by man, not created by God. So, you know, I think whatever the Jews have got, they've stolen.
I read somewhere, but I can't remember now, and the person was saying that it's something to do with devil worship, like Lucifer and that type of stuff.
I think it's a symbol of two things. And you have a triangle pointed down, which is God pointing down, and then you've got a triangle pointing up, which is man reaching up to God. But they use these symbols for Kabbalistic spells,
yeah,
and magic, and they use that star for making these talismans and various other symbols and signs that they use. You know, they're really into their black magic. I think that a lot of the black magic that came into Europe came in via them.
Well, that was one of the reasons that Edward kicked them out of England. It wasn't just the usury. It was reports of their rituals with English children, right? You heard that?
Yeah. All those reports, you know, the Jews were trying to say today, oh, it's blood libel, and, you know, they were attacking us. But it was the highest courts in the land, yeah, and some really, really well-recorded cases of this blood drinking and blood letting and crucifying young Christian boys.
Yeah.
You know, and they recorded all of it. You know, these were.
There's medieval paintings of them doing it and stuff, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's fully investigated, confessions, evidence, forensic evidence, you know, sort of caught with the body there, as it were.
Yeah.
Now, it's not like someone made this accusation or they were set up, because it happened in all over Europe, in different places in Europe.
Hmm. Okay, sorry, did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say it's really, really twisted.
Yeah, because it's kind of gone on with the elites now. I mean, you hear rumours that they do this kind of thing, you know, the high-level Masons and stuff, which has been taken over by Jewry, and they're supposed to be into this kind of stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, at the top. But I see all of it as coming from mixing between man and beast, basically. If you look at in Africa, or even in New Guinea, you know, it's got cannibals, you've got the magic that they do, it's all about sex and death, and horrific things, and spells, you know, and it's all about gaining materially, it's all about material gain, and that's what these aborigine, you can't really call them religion, but what magic is like. And when you've got two races mixed together, besides polluting the blood, you've also then got these magic things that these lower races do that then become mingled in with the religion, and then it corrupts the religion and it poisons the religion. So it's what I can see of it. That's why we've got Canaanite gods like Baal and Esther ended up making their way over here to all the way over to Britain.
And that, well, that's interesting because there's that Jew, isn't there? Esther Rancid.
Esther Rancid.
Yeah, and you don't hear that name much, do you, Esther? It's a very rare name.
Yeah, it's a book of the Bible. I don't think it should be in there, really.
But that's where that comes from, you know.
That's a clue to the fact that the Jews have nothing to do with Judah, because in that book it never mentions God, and these people. No, they're marrying to a different caste and a different people. Yeah? Specifically told not to do, and they'll lose their blessing if they do that. And then, at the end of it, they turn it into a festival. A regular festival. And one of the commandments of God is that they should only have the particular festivals that he's given them. and no more. So the fact that, you know, you've got these people with this made-up festival of Purim, it goes against everything that's said in the Old Testament, even in that book. You know, the Bible really does clearly identify that the Jews have nothing to do with the tribe of Judah, you know, and that they are the enemy.
What is Purim about? I've heard of it.
Well, they make these cakes up in the shape of ears.
Lovely.
Yeah, well, there's this Persian, they eat them, and that's supposed to be Haman's ears. And it goes back to this story of when they were in captivity, and there was a Persian king, I'm not sure which one it was, and one of them, this woman, managed to catch the Persian king's eye and marry the Persian king, so she got in there with him. And uncle had upset one of the Persian people, and he was saying, you know, these Jews' laws are diverse to all man. You know, it's a very true thing, saying these Jews' laws are diverse to all man. It worked out there was this group of people that were after taking over the world. But because this guy's daughter had married the king, he ends up being turned against him. And rather than exterminate the Jews and kicking them out, he ends up exterminating the good guy that had told him that the Jews were doing wrong, and they exterminate all his family. And the Jews today celebrate exterminating all this family, and according to the Bible, they massacred lots of people and were pretty wicked, generally. And to be honest, the Christian should read that and think, you know, well, this is telling me that way back then there was these imposters and these people that were marrying out of their caste and claiming to be something to do with the tribe of Judah. So, you know, for quite a while there's been these hangers-ons. It was later on that a whole tribe of them actually joined up with Judah, this tribe of Edom or Esau, who were hated by God. It says in the Bible, Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated. And Esau gave birth to all the Edomites are descended from Esau. And the Edomites are cursed by God in the Bible, and they are, you know, they're the number one enemy. And the Judeans, or the Judahites, a couple of hundred years before Christ, took them in to the land of Judah and started intermarrying with them. And King Herod was one of these. And the Pharisees were, a lot of the Pharisees were these Edomites, and a lot of the high priests were as well. So the people that had actually gone back to Judea, after they came back after this dispersion, that lot became all mingled, basically. Some of them became Christians when Christ came, but the majority of them were what we would call today Jews. They were
okay.
Half-caste mix, and they claimed to be from the tribe of Judah, but they weren't, because they were mixed up with these Edomites. And they're the Jews that Christ is condemning in the New Testament.
Okay, let me throw you a couple of curveballs, all right?
So that's probably a bit complicated there. Yeah, go on, Paul. Yeah.
Okay, why is there nothing about dinosaurs in the Bible?
I'm not that convinced that these dinosaurs actually were what they say they are. I've read a fair bit of information that they get these bones and they put them together to make whatever they think it should look like.
I thought you would have mentioned the behemoth.
Well, I'm sure there were different animals back then. You know, I'm sure there were different animals. The Leviathan and the behemoth. I mean, there were these mythical creatures. I think life was different then. I think the world was different. You know, I think there was a different constellation of the stars. We had the same planets, but they were a lot closer and they were in different positions. That would have caused different electrical waves going through the Earth. There may have been less gravity at the time. You know, lots of things could have been different. There's nothing to say that exactly the way the conditions are now is how it's been for the last 10,000 years. And I'm fairly certain that conditions were different back then, so...
Well, yeah, but, I mean, the dinosaurs, if you believe science, was like millions of years ago, weren't they?
Yeah, but, I mean, why would the Bible sort of mention the animals? I suppose it says that it's for the book of the generations of Adam. So, you know, it's saying it's specifically for Adam. It's about the generations of Adam, the father of the Aryans, and what his history is. And the bits of it are mythical, bits of it are historical, bits of it are inspirational. So it's not really going to give descriptions of the animals that are around. I know it mentions unicorns a couple of times.
What does it?
The leviathan, but I think it was supposed to have been killed by Yahweh. I think it had its head smashed into pieces, and I think the behemoth was speared as well. And that's similar to these other myths where the god smashes the sea serpent. You heard of that one? Where the god smashes the serpent?
No, I haven't heard that one.
Mixes the waters. That's another Hindu one, and another Egyptian one as well.
Okay, to finish off, what is meant by the term the elect?
Elect?
Yeah.
It says in the Bible that if the times hadn't been shortened, then even the elect would be deceived. Now, from what I can see, there used to be many, many, many nations of white people who colonised the whole world, who were on every continent with a civilisation. Now, each one of those civilizations has fallen, and each one of those nations of white people have become mingled and mixed with the other races and are no longer white people. So the only white people that are left are the ones that are in Europe. And from what I can see, the ones that are left in Europe are the ones that were descended from the tribes of Israel. And it says in the Bible that God will always save Israel, that he will always save his remnant, his portion. Now, all the other portions of the white people have gone, and there's only this one little portion left. And I think we're the elect, because we're the only ones left that can show an unbroken line going all the way back to Adam. It's just the Europeans, the white race, 8% of the world. You know, I think they say it used to be 90% of the world. We're now 8% of the world. And that's
yeah.
The only 8% left that can trace their ancestry right way back to the first white man.
It does seem strange that even like 100 years ago when we was 30% of the world, I mean, how could 30% invent, like, you know, 99% of inventions? It is odd to, without sort of at least having an open mind about this kind of subject.
Well, we are different to the other races. You know, we were blessed by God. He breathed into our nostrils, and man became a living soul. And he breathed the breath of life into his nostrils, which I think is synonymous with the spirit of truth. You know, we are different to the other races. And not to say that we should be persecuting them, but we certainly shouldn't be saying that we're equal to them, because we can't bring them up to our level. You know, all we can do is sink to their level.
Yeah.
You know, they can't douse for water. We can douse for water. You know, I think the highest state they can get to is a heightened sexual state, whereas the white man can restrain himself sexually and, gain spiritual insight through continence, which is what these priests used to do. They used to remain celibate. They would restrain the sexual fluid, which is the source of all life. They would restrain that. They believed that it went up the spine and it activated the mind. And I don't think, you know, that it's possible for the black races to do this. There's no history of them doing it, no tradition of them doing it. And, you know, they seem to be revolving, their lives seem to be revolved around how much they can get. You know, they're very women orientated. They're always after their bitches and hoes.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about all these sort of myths and legends around the world? From Japan, they've got one about sort of white-skinned gods, to the Hopi Indians have got it, the Mayans have got it. Do you think that was like an ancient races of whites that travelled around the world and sort of...
No, I think it was the original whites, the original Aryans, the Adamites.
How long back did they go?
It's very hard to say, because it could be mythic stuff, and it could be talking about an entire tribe when it's mentioning one person. But I'd say probably 5,500 BC.
Mm-hmm.
And about that time, you've got records of white civilizations sort of starting.
Yeah.
Just sort of slightly after that, I think in Mesopotamia. And in Japan, I mean, they used to be white. Well, there was a white nation there, and they got bred out of existence by the Japanese. And again, there's evidence of Aryans there going ages back. And again, they got bred out of existence. So I think these myths that talk about these white gods, they're talking about Aryans in that area that brought the gift of civilization to these lower races. And then they ended up mixing with the lower races and losing their special gift.
Because there is like a stone city under Japan. I watched a documentary about it. So it's completely underwater.
I haven't heard of that one. I know they're finding lost cities everywhere. I think there's one out in Russia, Swastika City, I think they're calling it.
Really?
In the shape of a swastika, the original Aryan civilization there.
Well, they do say that's where the word Caucasian comes from, the Caucasus region.
Yeah, and there's also the Caucasus Mountains, is it the pass there? Is where these Israelite tribes came through to get into Europe. Some of them travelled by boat, and other ones came through this pass. It's called the Israel Pass, and that's sort of when these Cimmerians arrived in Europe. They came through this pass. It's called the Israel Pass. And I think that's where they get the name Caucasian from. All these myths and ancient religions talk about an end of days. When the gods come back, and God comes back, and he just wipes out all the evil ones, destroys death once and for all. And then everything that we've been through in this at this level of reality will just seem like a blink of an eye, and we'll be into eternity. And I think a lot of us will be really ashamed of the way that we behave.
Yeah.
We realise, just how little it was that we had to do in order to get the reward of eternity, and to be so caught up in materialism and not to see, the truth, especially people that are bred with Negroes. I mean, I think they're going to be ashamed for all eternity when they find out that, that they destroyed all their bloodlines from then on. None of them had a living soul. And I'm not saying the other races don't have souls, but they don't have a living soul. They don't have particular sort of soul that the white man has. You don't know that they're going to be going to eternity. I know Miguel Serrano, who wrote Esoteric Hitlerism, he talks a lot about this, about the white man being the one with the soul, and how the white man bred with the beasts, and then you've got the animal men, and then they don't have they're not going to get into eternity, whereas the white man will, and then he'll have to not really explain himself, but will be ashamed in the presence of God for the wrong that he's done. I mean, the Orthodox Christians, they believe that hell is all the people are in the same place, but it's hell for those who have sinned through the shame of being in God's presence of what they have done. It's hell for them, whereas the people that have done right by God, I'm really pleased and happy to be in his presence. And I think, the Christian identity thing is very similar to that. All of Israel will be saved. It says in the Bible, all of Israel will be saved. It says all the white race will be saved. But a lot of them will be very ashamed at God's presence, I think.
So that seems to be the key point, really, with the Christian identity, that... When the Bible speaks of Israel and all Israel will be saved, it means the sons of Israel rather than that little bit of land in the Middle East.
Oh, yeah, the little bit of land doesn't No, it doesn't mean anything. That got taken from me years ago.
Yeah.
And Jesus said he's going to destroy it after he left, and he did. He destroyed the temple and smashed, you know, place was destroyed, annihilated. You know, it's the tribes of Israel in Europe that it's all about now. It's said in the Bible that they would forget their name, they'd be given a new name, they would forget the language, they would have a new language, which is English. It'd be a company of nations, you know, like the Commonwealth and the United States. Kings, there'll always be a king on the throne. We've got all these European kings. As far as I know, there aren't any Chinese kings or Negro kings. And the heraldry that all the royalty have and the upper houses of the European nobility, they all have heraldry that can be traced back to the heraldry that these tribes of Israel have. They each have an ensign, which is listed in the Old Testament.
Okay, well, it's an interesting talk, Sven. I'm going to end it there unless there's anything else you want to say.
No, I guess I could go on for ages.
Thanks for listening to Voice of Albion on the White Network.